Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio. This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. Along with your call, some topics to talk over. Tell us, Zorba.
Yes, we're going to talk about lack of exercise and obesity, which is a greater risk factor for sudden death. We're going to talk about that. Okay. And flu shots, you know, they're about 23-25% effective. What does that mean? What went wrong with today's flu shot? And what does that mean for you in the future?
Mm-hmm. And we have a recipe from the vault.
Spicy pumpkin soup. Now, let me talk a little bit about pumpkin. We associate pumpkin with pumpkin pie. We think about it mostly as a sweet thing. This is a savory recipe. And I must tell you, once you have pumpkin soup, you will be hooked on pumpkin soup. It's one of my favorite things to eat.
800-462-7413 is our number. You can call us right now. Zorba, let's take that first call. A listener in Knoxville, Tennessee joins in. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. We appreciate it. How can we help?
I've had a problem. Whenever I drink alcohol, wine, I'll have this problem with my right arm. I'll get like a tingling feeling and like it runs down my arm. And then my arm is sort of like get weak and like sort of like a paralysis, a tingling thing going on. So I don't know what's going on, so I try not to drink alcohol because of that fact. But what could be happening?
Yeah. Has this been going on for a while?
Yes. For a long time I've had the problem since I was a teenager.
And just with a little drink, a small drink, a beer or a little glass of wine?
Yes.
So it's been going on for a while, many years, 5 years. What is a while?
Like 20, 25 years.
Okay, so it's going on for a long time. I definitely would call that a while. Any difference between what you drink, you know, spirits or vodka, margarita, beer, wine, whiskey?
It's mostly wine. I don't drink a lot of whiskey, and I don't drink a lot of beer. But I've noticed it more so with wine that it would happen.
Okay, do you have migraine headaches?
Yes, I do.
You do have migraine headaches. Okay. And the reason why I ask is I think this is a migraine variant. Let me explain a little bit about migraines that are interesting. Migraines can cause, especially before the migraine, but in the migraine, can cause a bunch of different symptoms. It can cause visual symptoms. That's the most common, an aura that often occurs at the beginning of a migraine. It can cause auditory symptoms where people hear things rustling or sounds almost like that. And some people in severe migraines can appear to have a stroke and actually have stroke-like symptoms. You have tingling and symptoms with your arm that I think may be a migraine headache that wine brings up, and that's not unusual for wine to bring it up. That's my armchair diagnosis.
But let me maybe.
No, I think I. That's what I think this is. I think this is a migraine. Well, and I'm going to tell you how to, after Thomas.
Yeah, I just want to say, when you get your migraines, does the same thing happen? Well,
no, but I still think this may be a migraine variant. So I have a suggestion. I've got a couple of suggestions with this. And you're right, because the migraines that she gets may be in a different part of her brain. When you think about it, what happens is in the brain, you have a constriction and dilatation. And there can be different migraines. Sometimes people have an aura. Sometimes people have the headache. I've had migraines. Sometimes they're bad. And you've had migraines for many years, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. That's what I think this is. You're surprised, aren't you?
Yes, I am totally surprised. So, I had no idea they were related.
Well, I think they're related. So I've got a couple of suggestions because you're going to do some trials, and then I'd like you to call us back and let us know. Number one, I would use some simple things. I would take Excedrin migraine over the counter 1 hour before, have a drink, and see what it does. That works.
Okay.
You have a very simple answer because you want to go out and have some drinks. You take a couple of Excedrin migraine, you drop it, you see what that is. Number two, have you had a triptan, any kind of a triptan such as Maxalt or anyone at Sumatriptan for your migraines?
I have in the past, yes.
I would get that. And I would take that 1 hour before you drink. It's a much more effective medication than Excedrin migraine, and see if it happens then. If it happens with the triptan, you have pretty well assured, that if you got rid of it, that this is a migraine variant. The triptan is very specific. It doesn't work for normal tension headaches. It just works for migraines.
Well, thank you very much. Appreciate that.
My pleasure. It's a pleasure to talk to you. And please let us know what happens.
Yeah,
do call
you
us back.
Very much. We thank you for that call. Zorba, we sit and face each other once a week and talk. And I don't say this often enough. Yeah. You're kind of an amazing
doctor. No.
I mean, to pull something like that right out of your head.
A migraine headache. Yeah, I pulled it out. The little thing. Pulled it out of my head.
Anyway,
a little rabbit in my head that says migraine.
You're a person worth listening to for an hour every week.
Aw, shucks. That's it. I'm turning red. You can't see me. Aw, shucks.
800-462-7413, our toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413.
Tom, we sit across from one another. I never have a chance to tell you. You are great to sit across from. You ask the best questions. You got the best attitude.
That phone number flawlessly.
Unbelievable.
That's my job here. 800-462-7413.
That goes right to my heart, right to my heart.
Okay, let's get back to the phones. A listener with us now in Atlanta, Texas. Hi.
Hello, guys. I enjoy the show. I appreciate you taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling. How can we help?
Well, my name's Thomas, and my call is concerning my grandmother, who recently quit taking her arthritis medication because she got tired of paying the expensive prices for it. And somebody recommended to her that she take MSM, which I had never heard of. And in all my research and scouring the internet, I can find no scientific basis for why it claims to be a cure-all medicine. But she has been taking it for a couple of weeks now and swears that she feels better than she's felt in her life. And my question is there any scientific basis for this? Could it just be psychological? And if the answer is negative, she says she doesn't want to know it, but I'm curious.
Right. That's right. Well, first of all, my first piece of advice is do not talk to your grandmother about this, because she's correct. The placebo effect is very powerful. If you look at it for depression, it doesn't work for diabetes, but it works for depression. It works for chronic pain. And if this helps her, and even if it's a placebo, absolutely use it, because placebos have no downside.
Do you know what that is?
Well, it's a supplement. And I don't remember. It's MSN is basically a supplement. I don't remember the long name of the supplement. And like you said, you have scoured the internet for scientific evidence. And the answer is there ain't any scientific evidence. For the grammar police, I'm using ain't in the ancient English way.
Right.
So you look it up, grammar police, because ain't was used by the upper class as an affectation back in the 1700s. So do not call me about ain't, grammar folks out there. Getting back to the issue at hand.
Yes.
MSN is one of those supplements. There's no science behind it. Anecdotal evidence, people write in, I take it, and I, toss the diabetes pills and the arthritis pills and so on. But if it works for her, that's great. Looking back to her arthritis pills, the most common arthritis pills are generic. And Aleve, 2 tablets twice a day, a generic Aleve that's cheap. You can buy it at Target and Walmart and so on, cheaper than some of the other stores. 2 tablets in the morning, 2 tablets in the evening, or 1 in the morning, 1 in the evening may help your grandmother. She might have been on a more expensive pill like Celebrex, which is not superior to ibuprofen or Aleve. And if she's on the MSN and it's working, stick with it. But if not, the other issue is that when I prescribe a medicine, I don't know how much it costs on their insurance. There's tier 1, tier 2, and tier 3, and there's a copay. And the copays only go up. They never go down. Well, I don't see the copay when I'm doing it. So I might prescribe a tier 3, and they get to the pharmacy, and I don't see it on my on my chart. And that's very important. So she might have an alternative that also would work from her doctor. So bottom line advice, don't tell her that MSN has no scientific basis. Say, Grandma, if it works, stay with it. And I hope that helps you in the future. You must have a close relationship with your grandma.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. She's like a second mother to me. Wow. And so she told me pretty much immediately when she had done it, and I immediately started searching for why or why she shouldn't do it.
Uh-huh. Well, I think you're doing a good job.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Take care.
We appreciate the call. At 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, before our next call, interesting research, I think, on exercise and obesity.
That's right. Article out of the journal, American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, so it's a nutrition journal, looked at obesity, looked at exercise, being sedentary, exercise, mm-hmm. and they have discovered that exercise is far more important than obesity. In other words, if you put them together, being overweight is not nearly as deadly as being sedentary.
Well, how'd they figure this out?
Well, first of all, here it is. They looked at a number of studies. They brought it together, a mega study, 334,000 men and women followed for 12 years. So they took things like the Framingham study and the Nurses Health study, and these are self-reported. Do I exercise? Do I go out 20 minutes a day? What do I do? They put them all together. By the way, the exercise was minimal exercise, and they looked at height, waist circumference, they looked at weight, self-reported physical activity. That's where they found it. They found it that being fit and lean is not as important as getting off your butt and doing something.
And this isn't close, even.
No, it's even close. Now, what they found was that it's exercise that burned about 100 calories a day. And that's walking for about 20 to 30 minutes a day. And that reduced early death by somewhere between 15% and 30%. And it was twice as important as weight. So here it is. We're concentrating on weight as a risk factor, and we should be looking at exercise. And this falls in with another study that looked at sitting mm-hmm. as an independent risk factor for death. Mm-hmm. So they looked at, gee, I go to the gym 30 minutes a day,
right.
and then the rest of the time I sit. So yeah. They separated it out, and they looked at sitting as an independent risk factor. And they found that when you sit too much, that increases your death rate significantly.
Well, that's a little bit contradictory, because the first study says if you exercise even minimally,
right.
you're much better off than right. if you're overweight. And this says minimal exercise right. doesn't even work.
Well, it doesn't work. Right. So, but if we put it together, if we put both studies together, it says minimal exercise doesn't count as much as sitting. No, it adds sitting as a separate risk factor. This doesn't say minimal exercise doesn't work. This doesn't say a 20-minute walk doesn't work.
Yeah.
It says you should have a 20-minute walk and you should get up from your screen every hour or two and walk for 1 or 2 minutes.
Yeah.
In other words, they're independent risk factors. The 20-minute walk is going to reduce your death rate, but if you only do 20 minutes a day and you sit in front of the television or in front of the computer, that's another thing you should get up and do, because walking for 1 to 2 minutes several times a day will make a difference.
Yeah. Well, you know, if I'm overweight, which I'm not genetically, I'm just skinny,
right.
I can't gain any weight. But if I'm overweight, I'm listening to this and saying, oh, this isn't so bad.
Right. You mean because
you're
getting
as bad as the person who doesn't exercise or
right.
a person who sits all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I may be overweight,
right.
but I got around a
That's
little
right.
bit.
That's
so
yeah.
overweight
well,
is okay. Is
overweight, it does not count as much as burning 100 calories a day.
Yeah.
That's the bottom line. Burning 100 calories a day. And after 1 hour of sitting in front of the screen, getting up and
yeah,
moving around for
that,
2 or 3 minutes.
But there is still a risk factor.
Yes, but it's not as prominent.
Yeah.
It's still a risk factor. It's certainly a risk for diabetes, but it's not as important as getting off your derriere. Derriere is not a swear word.
Of course not.
Because it's not four letters.
Yeah. 800-462-7413, our toll-free number. Back to the phones now, Zorba. A Jacksonville, Florida listener joins us. Hi.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have the youngest of my children. She's 18, and she's about 13 to 14 weeks pregnant, and we're discussing prenatal vitamins. My oldest daughter was able to take more of a plant-based prenatal, and the younger daughter still feels nauseous and upset when she takes them. So we've switched to gummy bears, the little prenatal gummies that you get over the counter, but her husband seems to think that taking these is actually more harmful than a prenatal. He read somewhere that having a prenatal every day is not good, which never really heard of that, but she's only taking the recommended doses, 1 to 2 daily. She doesn't have the best of diets, But we do always try to eat healthy and mm-hmm. eat throughout the day.
Sure. So first of all, prenatal vitamins are good. They're not bad. So if he read that prenatal vitamins are bad, he was on a bad website because they're basically good. And, you know, on the web, it's garbage in, garbage out, right? You know, they'll say sunshine is bad for you. Cold air is bad for you. Hot air is bad for you. There is so much junk out there. And there's good stuff, you know. So, you know, differentiating it, you know, saying prenatal vitamins are bad is sort of something that you would get in the National Enquirer, you know, the baby with two heads. But what do they have that's good? Folic acid, a milligram a day, very important for her to have. So if she's taking gummy bears instead, you got to look at the folic acid, and it's 0.4 milligrams in a regular vitamin. So, you know, she's going to have to take three of those. She needs a milligram folic acid a day. That's important. The other thing it has that usually upsets the stomach is iron. That's the issue. And so she should talk to her doctor. Does she have a doctor or a midwife?
We have a doctor, but he has his backup person is actually a midwife. So we see between, like when the doctor's on vacation, we go to see the midwife. They're all in the same practice.
So what you want to do is talk to them about the vitamin issues. And the reason is there are different kinds of vitamin. And she may take a vitamin that doesn't have iron in it. Iron is the culprit. And then she may end up taking iron twice a week or three times a week. Because you need to make about 20% more blood when you have that baby. And iron is the issue, and you want to attend to that. You don't want her to be anemic, and you want the baby to have enough iron for blood and folic acid. So talk to the doctor, talk to the midwife, experiment with things, and turn off the computer. That's what I would recommend. I don't think the gummy bears are really doing what they should probably do.
Okay, so you think that they're actually like lower dosages than
They don't have enough folic acid. That's what they have.
Okay.
So you got to eat you got to get a milligram. The most they have, and I don't know what's in them, I'm not looking at them, is 0.4 milligrams. That's the standard, number one. Number two, they don't have iron. Those are the issues. So they don't have iron.
Okay.
Talk to the doc. And talk to the midwife.
What foods are higher to give like some natural folic acid, you know, other than maybe orange juice?
What you do is go to the web and look up folic acid foods. And those would be the foods. And I don't have that list in front of me. Folic acid is so important that a number of years ago, the FDA decided to put it in white bread. So it's in white bread as that because it reduces birth defects. But it's also important to have enough so that you're actually getting enough to make blood. So, you know, plant-based is okay, but then you've got to eat enough to make sure you're getting a milligram in every day. And that means looking on the web, eating those foods, and improving her diets that have it.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're most welcome. And good luck to that pregnancy and delivery.
800-462-7413. It's toll-free, of course, 800-462-7413. And before we take a quick break, Zorba, it's time again for your favorite segment, The Grammar Police.
Oh, no, it's The Grammar Police.
Today's disgraceful gaffe is pointed out to us by a Minnesota listener named Larry, who writes, "Dear Zorba, here is another ticket from the grammar police, or perhaps more correctly, the spelling and pronunciation police. On a recent show, you spelled and pronounced lutein incorrectly. You spelled it L-E-U-T-I-N. I just pronounced it incorrectly.
Keep going. That's all.
I'm not going to keep
going.
We're
listening. Please, keep going.
I'm dumping this.
No, you're not.
You're supposed to be the bad guy.
It's okay. I'm the bad guy.
Lutein incorrectly. You spelled it L-E-U-T-I-N when in fact, correct spelling is L-U-T-E-I-N. And you pronounced it lutein.
That's right.
When in fact, the correct pronunciation is, it says here, unbeknownst to me, lutein.
So
again.
Not only did I spell it incorrectly, but I pronounce it. Now, let's get on to the spelling. I come from a family of non-spellers.
Yeah.
I started using Microsoft Word as soon as they developed autocorrect.
Yeah.
So I no longer, when I type, have to spell, think about receive, whether or not it's E-I or I-E.
Yeah.
I spell it either way. It makes no difference, and it comes out correctly. So kudos to picking up the element of spelling.
Yeah, but now you're a talker for a living.
I'm a talker, so I will take that. It's Lutein, and I will take that.
Lutein.
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 I can't even pronounce it right often. But language is not – I can't learn Spanish or any other language, so I don't know if the Lutein will stick or not, but I'll try.
If you'd like to join the ever-growing and ever-persnickety grammar police force, send your grievances along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
Lutein. Lutein.
Lutein.
Lutein.
Lutein.
We have our recipe coming up. You'll want to stick around for that. More of your calls, of course. Our medical myth buster later on, and we have another topic to talk about. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again is 800-462-7413. You can call it right now and you'll have just a short wait. But before our next call, Zorba, it's recipe time, and this one for spicy pumpkin soup.
Okay, so as I said at the beginning of the show, we associate pumpkin with pie. You know, so we only think of it as sweet. But really, pumpkin is it's not sweet. When you take it out of the can, it's more like a squash, and that's really what it is. But we associate it with certain times of the year. I have made a number of variations of pumpkin soup over the year, and people love it. When they first taste it, they go, really, this is pumpkin? Because we only associate it. I mean, I think of pumpkin pie, and I think of Thanksgiving, and that's about it.
This is a long time ago we had this recipe. This one's from the vault. And I remember you saying pretty much the same thing.
Yeah, pretty much the same thing.
You kind of love pumpkin soup.
Absolutely.
And I can't see myself ever trying it.
It is a squash. It's a totally different taste. You associate it with sweetness and pie. The other thing that's interesting is about 3 or 4 years ago, I wanted to make it. I went to the store. I couldn't find pumpkin. Went to another store. Couldn't find pumpkin. They had sold out of pumpkin because there was a disease in the pumpkin patch from Libby, which is the company that makes most of the pumpkin.
Uh-huh.
And the pumpkin was out in November. It was just a big issue. So I always have, since that time, I always have pumpkin in my basement.
Well, see, that's not the worst thing that ever happened in the world.
No, it's not the worst thing that ever happened. That's right.
I could take that, I think.
A pumpkin shortage.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
Okay. So this is a spicy pumpkin soup.
Yep.
Tablespoon of olive oil.
Big tea olive oil.
A large carrot chopped up.
Large carrot chopped.
That's right. Large onion chopped.
Large onion chopped.
10 cups of low-sodium chicken broth.
10 cups low-sodium chicken broth.
Yeah, so that's 80 ounces of chicken broth.
Mm-hmm.
A cup of lentils.
Cup of lentils.
A teaspoon of ground cinnamon.
Little tea ground cinnamon.
Quarter teaspoon of ginger, ground ginger.
Quarter little tea ground ginger.
Half teaspoon of curry powder.
Half a little tea curry powder.
1/4 teaspoon of chili powder.
Quarter little tea chili powder.
And that's chili powder to make chili. And then what you need is 6 cups of pumpkin. And you can either get a pumpkin and do it, which I've only done once in my life because it was too painful to do, or just get 48 ounces in a can.
Painful in what sense?
Too much. It was too hard to do. Too much work. I had to peel it and cube it and punch it. So I would just use the canned pumpkin.
Okay, can of pumpkin.
That's right. Yeah. So in a large soup pot, heat the olive oil and saute the carrots and onions. Add the broth and lentils. Bring to a boil over high heat. Then reduce the heat. Partially cover and simmer for about 30 minutes. And stir in the cinnamon, ginger, curry, chili, and the pumpkin. Return it to a boil. Reduce it to low, partially cover, and simmer.
Mm-hmm.
And you simmer basically for an hour, but a lot of times it's done after about 20 minutes. Taste it. Stir it occasionally so it doesn't get stuck at the bottom. Salt and pepper to taste, and then spoon it into bowls, and you may want to top it with fresh parsley. It is a squash soup.
Mm-hmm.
So instead of thinking in your brain that pumpkin and you associate with pie, think of it more like a squash, an acorn squash or another squash, which we think of differently in our brain when we think of this food. Mm-hmm. It's really good. Excellent food. It's about 250 calories. Wonderful. Try it. You'll like it. Mm-hmm.
Now, if anyone would want this recipe, how could he or she get it?
Excellent. Excellent idea. You know, we used to have Gigi. Remember Gigi at the station?
Oh, sure,
who would
course,
send out the recipes. Wonderful. And then we went into this famous thing called the internet, and somehow we're still working on it. But anyway, you can go online and find us at Zorba. You can find it at ZorbaPastor.org, and you will get to our website. You'll see pictures of Tom. You can look at this recipe and other recipes. And you can, of course, find us on Facebook because we are there all the time. We are all over Facebook.
800-462-7413, the number to call if you'd like to talk with Zorba. And we get back to the phones right now, Zorba, with a listener in El Paso, Texas. Hi.
Hi. How are you doing today, guys? Your laughter is so infectious.
Thanks a lot. Thanks,
thanks
a lot.
So much for the call. How can we help?
I am a significant other of almost 17 years who loves hydrogen peroxide. And I mean loves it. It's open at every sink. And he uses it on a cut. And I understand that. But he pours it on a folded piece of clean paper towel. And when his eyes itch, and he lets some of it get into his eye, squeezes it against his eye. He brushes his teeth with it instead of toothpaste. And I do know that one time he was with me, and he mentioned something about hydrogen peroxide, and the doctor said, no, I don't want her to have that on that spot. Maybe something the doctor was removing, I don't remember. But because the hydrogen peroxide, after initial cleanliness of the area, does kill off the new cells as they're growing back or something to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
But anyhow, my friend often is putting it on because the area itches sometimes as it's healing, and it does take a long time, so I don't know if that's true or false. But what does hydrogen, is it harmful what he's doing with it?
Yes, I would think so for some things. Let's talk a little bit. Hydrogen peroxide was sort of an old-fashioned remedy. We would put it on wounds to clean the wounds. It turns out it does not do a good job. I don't use it at all in the office, but I used to use it. Kind of bubbles on wounds, makes us look like we're doing something. But in fact, cleaning the wound well with soap and water probably works better than hydrogen peroxide. You know, just plain soap and water, cleaning it with an antibacterial soap might be a little bit more. Cleaning it with something like ChloraPrep is even more, or HibaCleanse. But the reality is just soap and water works. Hydrogen peroxide, we just don't use. Now, it used to be that years ago, dentists would say, use hydrogen peroxide half strength and gargle with it. Move it around your teeth if you have gum disease. And that has turned out not to be true. That if you have gum disease, you have to floss. And the hydrogen peroxide doesn't do anything. So the idea of brushing your teeth with hydrogen peroxide, I don't think is going to do very much. And frankly, if you want something more natural, brush your teeth with baking soda. Baking soda is great.
Yeah. I didn't like the taste.
Yeah, baking soda. Well, you can brush your teeth with toothpaste. That's what for the taste. And if you want less chemicals in the toothpaste, Sensodyne is what I would use, or Tom's. Tom's doesn't have the same number of chemicals. But I don't think hydrogen peroxide is that good. Now, on intact skin with an itch, if he uses it and it's not painful, that's safe. That's not going to do anything. So if he uses, but if the skin is not intact, I don't think I would use it. I might stay away from it. So now,
how about the eyes?
No, I wouldn't use it on the eyes. I don't know what it does to the eyes. I wouldn't use it. I don't know if it's harmful to the eyes. It's not good for open wounds. So I.
Feels it removes the plaque from his teeth, and therefore he doesn't need to brush.
Yeah. I don't think.
I mean, he's brushing. He's brushing using it. He drips it onto his toothbrush and then. Yeah.
Well, some people have more plaque and other people have less plaque. So I don't think there's evidence that hydrogen peroxide does it. There's evidence that flossing does it and dental cleaning. There's no doubt about it.
And he does those. We do those.
Well, that's very good. Good luck on changing his behavior. It sounds like it's been longstanding.
Thanks so much for my call.
You're welcome. Take care.
We appreciate the call. At 800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, we welcome a listener in Sandpoint, Idaho. Hi.
Hey, how's it going?
Pretty good. How can we help?
Well, let's see. About a year ago, I woke up in the morning and I had some pressure on my chest. I'm going to be 60 in about a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm a high school teacher, and I was like, what's this?
Mm-hmm.
Out of the box. And I just tried to not be a hypochondriac, and I went to work, and we had a staff meeting, and I was talking to our health occupation teacher, and I said during the meeting, hey, what does it feel like if you're having a heart attack? and she said, well, some people feel like they have an elephant on their chest, and that's exactly what I was feeling.
Ooh.
And she said, you need to go to the ER. And I said, no, I can't. I'm fine. And it wouldn't go away. And so I did go, finally, to the ER during my prep, and I got diagnosed with pericarditis. I've been a runner my whole life. Like, where did this come from? They said, you know, take some naproxen. If it ever comes back, take it, and it should reduce the inflammation. So I kind of went on, and 6 months later, I feel like maybe I have a cold or strep throat or something. I'm not feeling good, and I went to our little urgent care, and in the next 5 minutes, I was in an ambulance to our Kootenai Medical Center in Coeur d'Alene because I was in AFib and had all this fluid and inflammation and a couple nights in the hospital, and it's recurrent pericarditis, a virus. Where the heck did this come from?
Tell us, Zorba, what is
pericarditis. Well, pericarditis, our heart is in a sac called the pericardium. And the pericardium is a little sort of glistening sac that our heart sits in. And pericarditis is an inflammation of that sac. And there's when it develops fluid, then the heart cannot beat properly because it's in a sac. It can't give the proper output. You can go into heart failure. You can die from it. Oh. Getting back to the issue, there are a couple of issues here. First of all, it tends to be recurrent. So you got to know how to treat it. You jump in with anti-inflammatories right away if you feel like it's recurrent. A lot of people have it, and it occurs for a few years, and then it stops. I mean, I've had patients who have had pericarditis, and they had 2 or 3 episodes, and they haven't had it in a decade. So that's the good news.
Really? So that's promising. That's good news.
But getting back to the issue, I want to get back to the fact that you had chest pain, and you didn't act on it right away. It's very important for anyone with chest pain. They feel like an elephant is standing on their chest to dial 911. And that's really important. Now, the other side is many people with heart attacks don't have a lot of pain, especially women. So if you get chest pain, you have the problem is when you have pericarditis, it's hard to differentiate between that and a heart attack. It's critical for you not to think of yourself, as my mother-in-law used to say, a cardiac cripple. That was a word that she used to use years ago. Like, I'm not going to do things because of it. But realize you've got some cardiac issues. And the fact is, you can live for many, many years with these if you take care of yourself and pay attention to your symptoms.
Okay. Well, I'll be a better patient about that and not and I'm glad that I'm going to not have anything on my birthday because I'm going with my kids to a remote cabin in central Idaho for 4 days with a hot springs. And so I won't have to worry about it. I'll just bring my meds.
Wonderful.
Thank you so much for your call. Take
care.
All right.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
800-462-7413 is the toll-free number. That's 800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, let's log back into the Zorba Pastor on Your Health inbox and take a question from a listener named Tom regarding memory and brain function. He writes, "Dear Zorba, I'm a computer programmer by trade and have recently considered taking the health of my brain head-on. At work, I often have so much on my mind, I forget simple things like taking out the trash or plugging in my cell phone at night. I took ginkgo biloba for just over a month, and I did not notice any change, so I stopped. Are there any other things I can do to improve the capacity, accuracy, or longevity of my brain function? But don't worry, if I get smarter, I won't let it go to my head."
Right. I love that. Well, first of all, this is a common problem. People say, in our hurly-burly world of fastness, gee, I can't concentrate as well. I've got to get this done and that done. You've got to look at the stressors of your life because there's nothing that increases brain function. Ginkgo biloba doesn't do it. Coffee actually increases brain function in the right amount. Too much can make you jittery. Antidepressants can help for people who are depressed. They may be anxious about things. And antidepressants work by getting rid of the anxiety. They don't cause you to be sleepy for drugs. drugs like Xanax or, you know, Xanax, which can definitely cause you, or lorazepam, Ativan can do that. So I would look towards less coffee, more free time, thinking of an antidepressant. But the real bottom line is giving yourself some space. And for that, I would recommend meditation, mindfulness, and yoga. Mm. Taking a break during the day and doing that often clears your brain. Mm. The other side of that is exercise often clears your brain. You go out and you exercise, and it increases brain function and energy. So looking at the physical part of your body, your brain with meditation or exercise may help you, and I would do that first before I would look at medications.
Mm-hmm. Don't forget, if you have a question for the good doctor, just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
Another interesting topic to talk about, that's coming up next. More of your calls. Our medical Mythbuster 2, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, if you'd like to talk with Zorba, 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, flu season with a shot that doesn't do that much.
Right. So let's talk about flu shots. Mm-hmm. When flu shots are effective, you know, and we're looking at large groups of population, they're about 60 to 70% effective. They will attenuate, decrease the symptoms that you have. They work really well much of the time in doing that. This particular year, they're not very effective.
Right.
And what happens is scientists look and say it's most likely going to be this sort of strain of flu. And then the flu bug, which often is smarter than we are, you know, the virus, decides to, if you will, have a genetic drift. And this year, the genetic drift, as it's called, was an H3N2, whatever that means.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. But instead of being 68% effective, they're only 23% effective. And the problem is flu shots are not, for instance, as good as measles shots. Measles shots are 99% effective. You give two shots, you're done. Flu shots at the present time work on the surface of the virus. The proteins on the surface of the virus, you produce antibodies, get rid of that protein. And that protein tends to change and it tends to drift. If we developed a flu shot for the core of the virus, if you will, the heart of the virus, it's not really a heart, mm-hmm. that would be better. But experiments have not been able to basically make a vaccine that did it. If that comes out, buy stock in that company because it may be a universal flu shot that you'll get one time.
Well, now, there are a lot of people that don't like any kind of shots and are going to look at this and say, aha, this flu shot doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I ever take flu shots?
Well, you know, that's kind of interesting. In the nursing home, I'm the medical director at the nursing home. And because we've had flu issues in the nursing home, we decided 2 years ago, there were people who didn't want to have the flu shot. That's their right.
Mm-hmm.
But we said, if you have congestion or a cold, you will have to wear a mask in the nursing home when you're there. And so, you know, which is uncomfortable, but the entire time on your shift, because you might have influenza, we don't want it to spread. And it turned out the next year after we did that, 100% of the people who worked in the nursing home took the flu shot.
They
and there were no
reasons.
In other words, because of that. So I think they're right. It's not perfect.
Yeah. Do we at this moment have any sense that the flu is worse this year than it has
been? Oh, it's definitely worse. There's no doubt about it. I've been using a lot of medication, Tamiflu, because we've had outbreaks. Tamiflu is great for prophylaxis, very, very effective, not 100%. If you've got influenza, you take Tamiflu for 7 days. It decreases some of the symptoms. It makes it end sooner. It doesn't get rid of the disease, which actually spreads. So this is a bad flu year. Wash your hands. Stay away from people with influenza. Tamiflu is a drug you may want to consider using. But next year, the flu shot will probably be better.
800-462-7413, toll free. And Zorba, we welcome a listener now in Hayden, Idaho. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I have a question about stem cell application. In my right knee, I have been diagnosed with severe osteoarthritis per the x-rays in my right knee. Functionally, I do pretty good. I'm not ready for a knee replacement. I know the procedure has not been, the stem cell therapy has not been approved by insurance or FDA and that type of thing. But I'm wondering, and there's two doctors locally that do that I know of, the stem cell thing. And I'm wondering if you can kind of educate me about the wiseness of doing something like that.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about these two doctors. They do it, and what do they charge? Because it's not covered by
insurance.
You know,
one of them actually advertises in the newspaper. I have not talked to them. One of them is about $5,000.
Right. They're charging a lot of money for the stem cell. Stem cell is a hot topic. It's a very hot topic. In Wisconsin, the University of Wisconsin, UW Foundation, is actually a leader in stem cells and what stem cells have potential for. But the problem with stem cells is we're in the potential phase of that. We're not in the this is what it does phase. And if we had stem cells that could actually produce more cartilage and put that cartilage back in the joint and make the joint better than surgery, we would be using them, frankly, because they would be useful. Now there's always the idea that there's collusion and the pharmaceutical companies don't want to bring it out and orthopedic surgeons don't want to bring it out and the hospitals don't want to bring it out because they'll start to lose money, and those are the people who believe that there's problems all along. I don't believe that at all. I don't think there's evidence that the stem cells work at all. I don't know where they're actually getting the stem cells, because it's not stem cells. They come from different ways. They either come from one of the lines that have been approved by the government for governmental research. So I don't think much of it. In fact, I don't think anything of it. I would keep my $5,000. I don't think it's going to do anything.
Okay, so being a wise consumer, just don't do it.
Yeah, I don't think you're going to get anything from it. Now, when we look at your osteoarthritis, are you at a point where you may need a knee replacement?
You know, I am not. Actually, the x-rays indicate it's severe, but functionality and my mobility, I do pretty well.
Yeah, and let me tell you something interesting. I had to have a CAT scan of my low back for other reasons, and I looked at the CAT scan results, and it looks terrible. I've got disc problems, and I've got compression problems from a previous injury, but I don't have much back pain. I mean, I have a little back pain, but if I look at the MRI scan, the CAT scan, it looks like I have terrible back pain. So I should have. It's the same thing. The x-ray doesn't count on how bad your knee is. It's your function. If your knee gets bad, Synvisc, which is made from a rooster's coxcomb, actually can help produce some extra, not cartilage, but some extra, if you will, fluid to help you with your knee. And it's often given prior to knee replacement. But stem cells, no. I think it's quack, quack, quackery.
Okay, but there is some research going on, but right now it's kind of a hoax, right?
There is. You got it. It's a hoax. There's lots of research going on. Lots of research for cartilage, believe me. There are hundreds of millions of dollars going into research on a way to get cartilage produced, because the drug company that discovers that has a blockbuster billion-dollar drug. No doubt about it. Lots of money in there. Nothing out yet.
Well, thank you very much. I feel well educated.
Thank you. Thank you for your call. Glad we could help.
800-462-7413, toll-free. And Zorba, time now for our medical myth buster. Today's question comes to us from a loyal listener, Larry, in La Crosse, Wisconsin. He writes, "Hi, Zorba. I'm a 65-year-old male. I've always been physically active, but 30 minutes of elliptical or bicycle exercise leaves my muscles and joints sore. Is there a greater risk from inactivity or taking anti-inflammatory drugs like Aleve? Is there a safe balance or mix with exercise and anti-inflammatory drugs?"
Well, first of all, anti-inflammatory drugs are great. And you use them especially if you're in good health. One or two Aleve once or twice a day can really help your muscles if you're bothered. Exercise is far better than no exercise. There is no doubt about it. And then looking at what you can do, you may need some stretching exercises before or after the exercise. You may add yoga into your plan, because yoga is wonderful for some some people it really helps their joints and it's better. So you may find some yoga postures, go to a class or two, learn some yoga postures. And that's what I would probably do first in a non-drug way. First, the yoga postures, looking at your exercise. Second, using a leave when you're bothered. Third, keep on exercising.
Have a myth for Zorba? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
800-462-7413, toll free. 1-800-462-7413. And now, Zorba, let's see if we can help a listener in Green Bay, Wisconsin. Hi.
Yes, I have a question for Dr. Zorba.
Mm-hmm.
I went for an annual physical a couple months ago, and I'm not one of these that like shots or anything, but they were pushing the shingles shot and the tetanus shot on me, but never once did they mention pneumonia. And I'm going to be 65 this year, mm-hmm. and I'm just wondering, is a pneumonia shot necessary, or, I mean, is it something I should be getting?
Uh-huh. Well, let's talk about those shots, you know. Mm-hmm. Immunizations, you know, how useful are they? Well, we wiped out measles, pretty much so, not completely. Mm-hmm. Measles is still present in those people who choose not to immunize their children because they're ill-informed. Mm-hmm. In my idea, I think it's great to immunize against measles, mumps, which used to cause sterility in children. Then they became sterile as adults, guys. polio, we got rid of polio. Tetanus, we don't see tetanus anymore. When I was a medical student, I saw two cases of tetanus in Cook County Hospital. Awful, awful disease. Now, what about adults? Well, if you had chicken pox, right?
I probably did, you know, back in those days.
Oh, yeah. I remember I had chicken pox, and my mother thought you would go blind if the room was light, so I had to stay in a dark room for 2 weeks. That's what I remember. And it was summer, and there was no television because we had one TV in the house, and nobody in our house read. That's my memories, being bored in a dark room. Anyway, the chicken pox virus lives within your body. You never get rid of it. Immunity drops as we get older. The Zoster vaccine prevents the virus, to some extent, from starting again, and it's the chickenpox virus that erupts that gives you shingles, herpes zoster. The virus immunization is pretty good. It's 60 to 80% effective, depending on your age. It's not 100% at all. I received it. I recommend it to everyone because even if you get a case, it's probably not going to be as strong. So that's important. Now, then there is DPAT, the diphtheria acellular pertussis. Those are very important. And the diphtheria and pertussis shot are important because whooping cough, and in Chinese, the name for whooping cough is the 100-day cough. And the reason why it's called whooping cough is you go, and you get all the air out of your lungs, and then you whoop, you go, as you're bringing the air in. That's why it's called that. Adults are prone to whooping cough. And the number one state for outbreaks last year, not this year, happened to be Wisconsin for pertussis, and we don't know why.
Oh, great.
So adults should definitely get it, no doubt about it. And now finally, what about the pneumonia shot? The recommendations by the feds are to get the pneumonia shot when you're 65. So even though you could give it at 64, we don't give it until you're 65. You get it one time. You may decide, we give it to a number of people before they're 65, if they're a diabetic, if they're an asthmatic, they've got lung disease, a whole bunch of reasons to give it. It doesn't stop all forms of pneumonia, but it stops some very, very common forms of pneumonia. So the answer is yes, when you're 65.
When I'm 65.
Yeah, it sounds like a song, when I'm 65.
That's good, because I don't like needles anyway, so it's like, all right. If I can get away from another shot for a while, I'll do it.
Yeah, well, that's the way to do it. By the way, the shot that tends to hurt 2 to 3 days later is the tetanus shot. The tetanus shot causes, and that's the one we associate with pain and discomfort. But, yeah, get the pneumonia shot on your 65th birthday or thereafter.
On my 65th birthday. Okay.
Yeah, you don't sound you don't sound like you're 65.
Happy
you
birthday.
Sound younger. Happy birthday. Here's the shot.
Well, I got five kids, and I got 11 grandkids, so that tells you I'm almost 65.
There you go. Thanks for your call.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Zorba.
800-462-7413.
You're terrible.
1-800-462-7413. And before we head out today, Zorba, let's take a question from Adam of Helena, Montana. He writes, Dear Zorba, About 6 weeks ago, I sprained my ankle. It's mostly healed, but a new symptom has me puzzled and a little worried. When I cough, a sharp pain shoots into my foot for a couple of seconds. It also happens if my blood pressure suddenly spikes. I was lying in bed this morning, half awake, when my phone rang. This caused my heart to race for a second, elevating my blood pressure and sending that pain shooting into my foot. Could I have some vascular damage in my foot that would cause this? Keep up the good work.
Keep up the good work. Well, first of all, when the phone rings, your blood pressure may go up. And, you know, especially, I mean, I assume you're sleeping. If you're sleeping, got to elevate the blood pressure and who's on the phone. And, you know, I think we're old. Anyone who's got a landline is old school. When the phone rang in the middle of the night, it was serious. I don't think cell phones are the same thing. If the phone rings in the middle of the night, it's more often a pocket call. And you've gone to sleep, or a butt call, as other people call it. And I certainly have engaged in that by accident. I'm not sure what's going on with your foot. That's a good question. Is there a vascular problem? Well, arterial vascular problems often happen when you're walking. Mm-hmm. You know, you walk and you get pain and discomfort. So certainly, you know, getting an evaluation by a doc in this case is what I would expect, because I don't know what's going on with that pain. Blood pressure, heart racing makes a difference, but I'm not sure what's going on.
What would a doc do?
Well, first of all, in a clinical examination, you would look at the leg. You would look at whether or not there's venous return in the nails. That gives you an idea for capillary. You would check the arteries. You would check the posterior tibial artery and see whether or not the arteries are going. The artery on top of the foot you would check. You'd look at the color. You'd see whether or not there's swelling going on and other things. There are a lot of things you do on the clinical examination. And if in doubt, you would also check to see whether or not there were a blood clot. This does not sound like a blood clot, but something's going on. I'm not sure what it is.
Have a question for Zorba? Just send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org or post it on Facebook.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at zorbapastor.org or Facebook.
And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Carl Christensen, and our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0207Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at zorbapastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.